welcome to episode 11 of the Trail Currents podcast. I'm Jamil Curry.
I'm Jubilee Page.
Welcome back, everybody.
Hooray.
Thanks for joining us. This week, we have an interesting show today. We're basically just going to talk about running 200 miles because I just did that.
What?
And we're following up from last week's show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You did it.
Cool. did I say the whole thing? The little intro. Welcome to the Trail Currents podcast, the show that talks about making waves in the trail running world.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're good.
It's fine.
As you guys know, you can catch this. Hopefully, you know, you can catch this show not only here on YouTube, but also on Apple Podcasts, or maybe actually, I think an equal number of people are listening to it that view it. So
cool.
However you consume it, thank you. We really appreciate your time and your ear. And hopefully you'll get something out of this episode.
What's up, Jam?
Do you want to talk about our sponsor first?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
This week's sponsor is actually AeroVipa's new night race coming to you during the Javelina 100 this year, October 26th and 27th. Jackass Night Trails. It's basically the event within an event.
Yes.
Yes.
Inaugural.
Inaugural race. Jackass Night Trails basically gives those who are not prepared to do 100K, 100 mile, that experience of Javelina 100 with a one or two loop option that actually kicks off right at sunset, and they get to go to Jackass Junction at the peak of that crazy wild party in the desert.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. I definitely wish I could run it, but I can't run any of the races associated with Javelina 100. There's way too much going on.
Can I run it?
No.
Oh.
Sorry. Some year, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
No, I enjoy my spot. Yeah.
It's going to be, definitely going to be fun. It's going to have a great vibe, I think, and I think you're hoping that everyone who runs it has a piece of glowing
definitely.
Something, right?
Yeah, so it's a little
and
bit...
add to the party
it's
and the
just,
experience.
Yeah, it's a little bit funkier. You know, it's definitely themed, so I'd appreciate folks getting out there in costume, wearing something that glows at night. They actually, instead of kind of the traditional bib pickup, we do a party pack. And everything within the party pack, they can use that night... during their run. So not only does it include a shirt, it includes a whole bunch of glowing things, things that maybe blink and light up, and a reusable cup is their party cup that they can take with them. I know that there are various libations out at Jackass Junction. Don't know the details on that. Maybe I shouldn't as RD, but, you know, that's all... You get to this party on foot, and it's the only way to do it. So it's going to be pretty crazy.
Cool. Sounds great.
Yeah. If you guys are in the area and you want to experience Jackass Night Trail, and you're a listener of Trail Currents Podcast, you can enter the discount code TCP15, and you get 15% off of the current registration of Jackass Night Trails. We want to see you out there.
Awesome. And we still have going on from last week's show for Flagstaff Sky Peaks.
Yeah.
I think it was FSP 15 for that
FSP 15 for Flagstaff Sky Peaks. That is still going on for the next week. And we've seen some good movement in
Oh, yeah.
That.
We've got, I think, over 75 people
yeah.
signed up already.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to get to 200. So if you guys are looking for something to do that weekend, October 6th, you're in Arizona or want to fly on in for some fall colors up high,
yeah,
come out and join us.
And even if you're local to the area, you want to escape the heat, you know, come up north. The leaves will be changing during that time, so it'll really be pretty. I actually ran over the weekend the Aspen Loop and then way up north near some of the 50-mile and 50K course, and it's just going to be stunning.
Awesome. All right, well, let's get into it. We're going to talk about running 200 miles today. This is something that is fairly new in the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, fixed time events and long events have been around for a long time, but I think we're seeing a push of the 200 mile distance becoming more mainstream. I think this is my first experience with it. Yeah. So I'm now talking about it, I guess. I'm just happy to be on the other side of it. Last week I was worried. I think I literally stayed up all of Wednesday night and left Thursday morning on a plane without sleeping, and then had one night's rest and then started running. So that was insane.
I think we were recorded.
Because I did.
We recorded the podcast and then you went like straight to work, and we did that at like midnight, and you're like, okay, I've got about 4 hours of work and then I got to get on a plane.
I was still, I think I was still working all night. Yeah, absolutely. I don't even know what I was doing, but.
So, I mean, sleep deprivation training, maybe?
Yeah, and maybe it's finally paying off because I got just a couple hours during the whole race.
I mean, you know, talking to you last week, you were a little worried about running the distance, and not only that, but, like, I don't know, like, there was a little bit of hesitation in, like, the whole process. You weren't maybe, you weren't sure that you wanted to do it, or you didn't,
Yeah, I think even a couple weeks ago, I hadn't yet booked tickets or anything to get up there. And because I hadn't really run all of last month, I think I had 3-0 weeks.
That was your biggest.
50-plus mile week because I was filming at Pike's Peak. And that was probably, it was like I was forced to run. It's probably the only reason that I ran that anything in the last month, just because we've been opening our restaurant, Freak Brothers Pizza. We have a lot going on with Aravaipa with events and... there's just, I haven't made it a priority. I've just been head down, buried in a lot of stuff. So, yeah.
So this kind of was just all on top of that, and it just happened to be a 200-mile race.
Yeah. Just, I mean, I committed to this, I think it was last December.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get an entry through Solomon, who is sponsoring the race, and just wanted to see what it was all about.
Yeah.
I think I would like to organize a 200-miler with Aravaipa at some point. And I think it was, for me, a good way to personally experience what the participants and runners at that distance go through, so that I can better maybe empathize with the runner and their experience, and see what it would take to put on something like that. I think it's important. And also just a little street cred, so that, it's like, you know, when they're out there at mile 180, I know what that's like.
Right on.
And I can really, you know, be there for that runner and just be like, yep, I've been there and you can do this type of thing.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
All right, cool.
And, I chose Tahoe. It just sounded cool. I had run the Tahoe Rim Trail 50 mile before and been up there. It's right near Squaw Valley, where Western State starts. I think the start of the Tahoe 200 is maybe, it's probably 25 minutes from the start of Western State. So it's right up in that area.
Very cool.
And it just seems like a beautiful area. And I think it's put on by Candace Burt, who... she's put on some of the first, you know, more epic 200 milers. There's been 200 milers put on in the U.S. before.
Yeah.
I know there's one up in Pittsfield a few years back, and there's been other like looped type courses, and of course fixed time races. I mean, we technically put on a couple 200 milers. You know, six day races.
Yeah.
You know, we're put on a 500 miler because people do 500 miles.
Absolutely,
so, but that, you know, those are different. They're fixed time, or even some of the looped ones. There's quite a few other 200s that are maybe, hey, it's a 10 mile loop, or there's like an 888K, I think, in Vermont. So that's, you know, there's some long stuff out there, but Candace put on, you know, the Tahoe, which is a single loop. In quotes, there's a little bit of an out and back at the beginning and end, but it's basically a one loop course, a couple out and backs to some different aid stations, and then puts on another looped one in Moab and a point to point one in Washington, I think.
Yep.
But I'm sure there's going to be more popping up as I think people continue to want to push their limits and see what they're capable of. And yeah, I think it would be fun for, I think Aravipa is pretty capable. We have the right people and equipment to put on a really professionally managed epic type race. And so hopefully we can, put out some details on that somewhat soon, but not today.
But you definitely, you definitely have something in mind.
I got something in mind for sure, but we'll focus on my experience here at this race.
Leave that for another day.
And
So I wanna ask you about your experience. Basically,
sure.
I just kind of wanna go over a little bit of your overall experience running this distance, because it's the first time that you've done it. It's the first time that you were on your feet for 60 plus hours with very little sleep, with very little. I mean, like you said, you had three almost 0 weeks. And very sleep deprived as well, considering your schedule. But kind of like just to start, what was your overall impression of the distance?
Well, there was a video, I think a picture taken of me at the race briefing, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon the day before the race. And I'm literally falling asleep into my hands, just like sitting down because I was so tired.
Yeah,
overall, my experience is that it was really hard. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done, period.
Mm-hmm.
In ultra running, in anything I've ever done physically, it's just so far. It's so long. It's not just double. I know it is literally double the 100-mile distance, but it seems more like triple or quadruple. It's not a linear experience from the 100 mile. It's exponential. It's exponentially harder. It's a lot more time. It's not just going to take you. I thought going into it, this will be easy to do sub 48 should happen, because I can run 100 miles in under 20 hours.
Sure.
And my next one's going to take me 40. It doesn't seem possible, right? Or maybe even if I really slow down, it's still never going to take me 40 more hours.
Sure.
But it's just, once you get going, it is so long. It's so far. The finish line's so far away that it's days away. And it just seems, it does seem impossible at times. And that was my biggest impression right away.
Yeah.
It's just that it is really far, and that may sound just totally like duh for a lot of people.
Were you able to kind of like break it up into segments as you kind of went along, like not thinking necessarily about the days away finish line, but more like, I'm just gonna get to the next aid station that's 20 plus miles away, which is still a far, like that's a really long segment.
Yeah, a 20 mile run is that's a long run for most of us. Even for me, I don't often just go out for more than a 20-mile run in a week as a long run. So to have to just pile those right after one another, it's definitely... I didn't really think of the distance early on. I mostly just tried to just walk as much as I could.
Yeah.
And I really stuck to that plan pretty well. I was going to walk all the flats and the ups, and I did that. Even there's a section pretty early on after the first aid station where you run down, back down out of the mountains after the first climb and descent, and you're right along Lake Tahoe on a bike path, and it's paved for a couple miles. And, you know, everyone's just jogging right past me, like tons and tons of people. And I'm just walking, you know, maybe 15 minutes per mile. So I'm hiking, you know, pretty strong. But I'm like, 4 miles an hour, that's 15 minutes per mile.
Mm-hmm.
If you did that for the whole 200, that's 48 hours right there. So I'm like, I'm on 48-hour pace, and people are just running right past me. It's like, I'm probably going to pass them later. And I did, of course. But
yeah.
There's different strategies, I suppose. But I was really respecting the distance and where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not going to use any extra effort early on and save it, basically, is what the plan was. As far as breaking it up, I don't know. It just kind of felt like one long experience, and you just kind of can't really think about it too much. But yeah, you look down at your watch and you're just like, every once in a while, and the miles are kind of clicking by. You're 18 miles in, then you're 25 miles in, then you're 40, then you're 50, then you're 80, and it just kind of starts to blend together, and it just keeps happening. And you just want to keep moving forward, because that's the only way to get closer to the finish line.
Yeah. I mean, kind of watching the progression of the race, like, do you think kind of starting slow was advantageous to you? Because, I mean, throughout the race, you did creep up quite a bit and then eventually finished, I mean, top 10, but fifth overall, yeah.
Fifth place, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a key part of it all. I think if I was more rested and better trained, if I did this again, I would probably maybe push harder early on. I just didn't know what I would have left at the end. And it was great, because I had a lot left at the end, actually. I left mile 180. Had my lowest point between 140. It was like 150 to 180 was the lowest point of the race for me. I was with my pacer, but it's the heat of the afternoon on... it's like the third afternoon. It's like, I don't even know. Yeah, like we had two full nights, third afternoon, and it was a really technical section. There's some Jeep trail. There was this game trail, and it was just not maintained at all. Mm. It was just, it's been destroyed, and it's just like rocks and fallen trees all mixed in there. So like the footing is really technical. Like even if I was fresh, it would probably be hard to run.
Sure.
But I was just so in a bad spot there. It was hot. I was running out of water. It was dusty. My mouth was dry constantly. I was kind of feeling a little sick, and just, and my contacts got all dusted up and I had to take them out. So I kind of couldn't see super well. It just felt like, I was just like, why isn't this trail maintained? Or why is this even in the race? Is this even a Forest Service maintained trail? What's going on? Like all these negative thoughts in my head,
because
I was just in such a low place. And also just, you know, my feet are hurting. I was developing several blisters at that point, like my pinky toes, and then on the heels of my feet, like on both outside edges for some reason. And honestly, I think a lot of some blisters, maybe not ones that are directly on the, because I didn't really have any on the bottoms of my feet, like my ball, my foot or anything.
Yeah.
But if it's like kind of on the sides and in the pinky toes, those are the kind of popped. And I honestly, it's kind of mental.
Yeah.
I really think a lot of pain and, you know, injuries or things during a run like this. Are mental things.
That, like, dealing with the pain?
You can overcome them, and you think you can even... I heard that Jared Campbell did this in Barkley one year. He like, disassociated his pain from his body somehow. He like, gave his pain to someone else, like, that was with him, but he put all the pain on this other person, and then he no longer had it.
Yeah.
Like, there's weird things that you start thinking about. And I can talk about a couple of them. One was when I left the mile 180 aid station. It was right after Skyler, who is my pacer, left. So I was at that aid station, and I think I was in fifth, and the guy ahead of me had left a little bit earlier. I was getting food, and also I decided to get... Our coffee machine is just going off right now on its own. I decided to try and take care of my blisters a little bit. So, like, take off my socks and shoes and try and pop them and address the situation a bit. And, like, the guy right behind me had come into the aid station right as I was kind of gearing up to leave. So I was like, I'm going to try and reset everything and finish strong.
Yeah.
So I felt really good after eating, like, I think I had a vegan burger, and I was just kind of, felt good to just sit down, and I washed my legs and my feet completely, so I kind of felt a little fresher, and took off out of that aid station running, and I had all these the blister pains were still there. And I just thought to myself, like, I did this back in the Arizona Trail in 2008. I got blisters every day, and yeah. blisters upon blisters. But I would hike for the first hour, and then they would just kind of numb out. And then the whole rest of the day was fine. I didn't even really notice them. I mean, it's kind of there.
Yeah.
But the first few minutes, or like the first hour, was the hardest, until you just kind of like beat them into submission. So I was like, I'm just going to beat my feet into submission. So I start, like, I'm running down, and there's like rocks, and I just like start like beating my feet on the ground, like right where the blister is. I'm just like hammering each blister until it just, there's like so much pain happening.
Yeah.
That at some point it just can't be, there can't be any more pain, and it just dissipated away. And I didn't even notice them after that. It was a weird thing.
And this was like 20 miles from the finish. Like, you're just...
Yeah, I'm like pounding my feet into the ground, like right, I'm trying to press right on the blister. Because earlier I was really tiptoeing down the trail,
yeah.
not running because my blisters were hurting so much. And I was just,
It's like finding that threshold of just like, and then it's nothing.
It's like, I'm just going to attack this head on.
Yeah.
By just, you know... At some point, if you just like make it hurt enough, you kind of, all those pain receptors are sure. maxed out, and then you don't even feel it anymore.
Kind of embraced it, and that was your...
Yep.
That was
and amazing. It just numbed it out, and it's kind of like when I had had this crazy rash before Barkley last year.
Yeah, I remember.
And there's a thing you can do, because it's so itchy, because it's like an itchy rash.
Yeah.
And you can... There's like a thing called histamines. Like, they have antihistamines.
Sure.
But it's like a pain thing where, like, you can actually go to a hot shower, like really hot water, almost scalding, and you turn it on and you like let it run onto the area that's affected.
Mm-hmm.
And it like burns so much, and it hurts, and it activates all the histamines in there until they like run out, and they can no longer elicit that itchy feeling for like 8 hours. So you get relief by just almost overwhelming them. So that's, I don't know.
So that was kind of your tactic of,
yeah, for the blister,
for the pain,
for
yeah.
the blister pain. It just, I was overwhelming the pain receptors until they just, there's like nothing else they could do. It's like, well, this isn't working. He clearly doesn't care that this hurts. So yeah, that was kind of one mental tactic I used. And then there was another weird thing that happened towards the end. So at the last part of the race, you enter the Rubicon Trail, which is it's like a rock crawling area, mm-hmm. where they, you know, these jeeps that have crazy suspensions, and they're going up cliffs and twisting sideways and doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and you're running along this area, which is wild.
Yeah,
it's just a weird thing to be doing. It's very slow and technical. You're like almost on all fours. You're climbing up dust-covered things. There's like oil stains everywhere from jeeps that have gotten messed up. And I had my ankles taped from the start of the race. But when I fixed my blisters, I took the tape off, and I forgot to reapply it.
Yeah.
And so I'm starting to get some ankle pain after hopping on all these rocks and leaping over them. And it gets hurting a lot, especially when my ankle would roll inwards.
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of retrain the way I was running my gait, so that I was running on the outside, kind of where it would roll to the outside and it wouldn't hurt at all.
Yeah.
So I was like consciously retraining my stride. It's a really, and I don't even know if this is a real thing, but I was maybe just so delusional. I felt like it was working, and eventually it did. Like, I had so much pain initially, and then, I mean, toward a few miles later, I was able to run pain-free on it, and I wasn't rolling to the inside anymore, and I was able to charge down the last hill at like a 9-minute pace, which nice. Was really fast at that point.
But, yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of a random train of thought. I don't know what the question was, but I just went off on some tangents.
No, I mean, that's good, because you were kind of going into a little bit of like your low points and like the kind of the mental toughness that you almost have to have with that kind of experience. But like, what was kind of your high point then for like your overall 200?
Yeah, I think after the 102, there's like an aid station at 102, like 100 mile mark, halfway basically. I kind of had another low point the first night into mile 100.
Yeah.
Because I was so tired that first night. I was hoping not to sleep the first night and get through it and maybe the next afternoon take a nap. But I actually took a Monster Energy drink at 2 in the morning, left, and I was pretty alert before I drank that even. It's doing pretty, really good, surprised myself.
Yeah.
Headed at it from there, and I had 40 miles to, it was like close to 40 to meet my crew again. It's like, I think out of the mile 65 aid station. Started going up immediately. Within minutes, I was so sleepy. Could not keep my eyes open. I was just a zombie walking, and my pace slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
So I laid down on this little bench for, it's like 20 minutes. I didn't set an alarm or anything. I just laid down and fell asleep. And it was a cold night, and so I just let the cold wake me up. So once I was cold enough, I just like got up and started walking again.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a little bit of the edge off. I was able to move ahead for, you know, a couple hours. Then I had to do it again. Just lay down on the side of the trail by a log. And then I had to do that one more time right before the sun came up. And then once I got to the mile 80 aid station, that's where I took a 40-minute nap in a chair, just with a blanket over me. And so that was kind of a low point, I'd say, because I was losing time. I probably lost, you know, a couple hours just between the actual sleeping time and just slowing down my pace. So people that I had left left a long time ago were all of a sudden catching back up to me. They were passing me. And I thought, it's weird because I thought I was in like 20th position a little bit earlier, and then I got into mile 80 and I think they said I was like 6th person in. I was like, what happened to everyone? Like, maybe everyone else was sleeping
they
out
slept
there too.
On the, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. Or they slept at like one of the aid stations and I didn't see it. So, but then, while I was napping there, a bunch of people caught up to me, like maybe, you know, 4 or 5 more people. They all came in, and some, I think, ended up, I didn't see them, but I think they were sleeping there too, mm-hmm. because I left out of there and I still was maybe only in 8th, so I didn't really lose too many positions while I was napping. And that next stretch was not my favorite. It was beautiful, but I was still fighting that tiredness,
mm-hmm.
and it was also a long stretch, and it was hot, and I was just starting to, I think I was a little nauseous too, so I wasn't eating very much,
mm-hmm.
and I was just starting to lose some momentum into the mile 100. And then just the fact that you know you're not even halfway done yet is pretty hard. So by the time I did get to mile 100, which was at the Heavenly Ski Resort, I was in such a negative mood. Like, I was annoyed at the course and like the way it went. Like, why doesn't it just go directly there? We have to go all the way up and then come down and do an out and back. I was like, what is going on here? Why isn't there more water, like, for runners on these giant stretches with 20 miles between? Because it was a legitimately hot day. And I was kind of concerned for the other runners, too. I'm like, I'm from Phoenix. I should be fine. But even I'm having issues out here. And I'm carrying 4 bottles of water. I can't imagine what everyone else is going through.
Sure.
But I got into 102, and that was the realization moment of just how long this is. It's like 28 hours or something. I was trying to get there in 24. So I lost several hours sleeping and just slowing down.
Excuse me.
Still catching up.
Still a little tired, but
I mean, it sounds
I could be done right now.
Yeah.
Like, I could literally be done, and I am halfway. And it was just like, what did I sign up for? What am I doing? And it really kind of changed my whole perspective about the sport and the length of distance of some of these races. I mean, 100 miles is a really long way, but 200 is so much further. It really makes you appreciate how short 100 miles is. Like it's a day,
it's all
give
relative,
or take.
really.
It's a day, give or take, and a 200 is 3 days, give or take. It's triple that for most people. You know, if you're Courtney, you're gonna be two, but if you're, you know, other people, you're gonna be four.
Sure.
Give or take a day. So that was really, it was hard to leave there. And yeah, I was like joking with my crew. I was like, I'm good. Like I've done 100. I feel really accomplished. And they're like, you're not stopping here. Like there's no way. And I don't think I was seriously thinking about dropping, but
yeah,
I was seriously thinking how nice it would be to be done right then.
Sure. it kind of sounds like your sleep strategy, like maybe you didn't have one and you just kind of slept when you could. Because, I mean, from talking to you a little bit, like you didn't sleep very, very often. Like you really rolled on the whole 200 with just a few hours of sleep total.
Yeah, I was proud of that. The other nap I took was a planned one.
Yeah.
So we kind of made up a plan at mile 117 when I saw my crew again, and my pacer had arrived by that point, but he wasn't joining me yet.
Yeah.
And I basically told them, like, I'm struggling. I'm doing a lot of caffeine, but I want to be careful with my caffeine use because I know that can be dangerous, like in excess. And when can I sleep is basically what I asked them. They're like, well, get to 140 and then it's going to be indoors. There's going to be air mattresses and things you can actually go down and get a good full cycle of sleep versus this little trail nap, which I think is, you know, maybe not as valuable. But so that was my new goal. It was like, well, if I get to there, to 140, then it'll be, that'll be a good spot to sleep.
Sure.
So that was basically the plan. And I did get there and they said they were going to let me sleep for 90 minutes and they woke me up after 80. Jerks. But they wanted to get me back out there. So it was okay. And I didn't need to sleep again the whole race. So that was cool. But, I really pushed it hard from 100 to 140. I think I got some good food in me finally at 100 and I wasn't feeling nauseous. So I was able to, and because I had walked so much of that first 100, I think I was fresh. So I think that really did pay off. I was running really hard for a lot of those miles, you know, even on uphill, the downhill section, I was flying.
Yeah.
I passed a couple people that had passed me up in the aid station and really put some time on some people. So that was really, really cool to be able to do that. And but I did I need a Red Bull or something right now.
I totally have one.
But I think I pushed a little too hard maybe in that section.
Sure.
Because when I got up from that nap at 140 and started out with my pacer, I was nauseous when I woke up. I didn't take in much food and I set out on the trail, and that's where like that was just a tough next stretch. So maybe I would have kept it a little more tempered for some of those sections, but also I was having fun and feeling pretty good. And yeah, I probably lost a couple hours of my finish time from that section. Maybe I would have been closer to, you know, being able to get fourth place or even third place overall.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was really happy at the end of the day with fifth. And
I think, yeah.
And I was happy to go. Honestly, it's funny. I was happy to go over 60 hours because most people would be like, I want to finish as soon as possible. But for me, this was a great Barkley training experience.
Yeah.
That race is going to be 59 hours and some odd minutes in all likelihood. And it will be probably less than 2 hours of sleep for the whole thing. And I now have context for that. I didn't before. One time I went 54 hours, but I slept 8 hours of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really the same. And it's not even as long.
Yeah.
And I had nothing else has even come close to that. I've had some 40 hour stuff, but now I have this 64-hour with 3 hours sleep experience. So 59 with two, that seems really doable now. And I think I can learn some things from this experience. And yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, what can you take away from this that's going to help you in the future, especially with a race like Barkley, where you know it's a 60-hour race and you have the experience of being on your feet for 60-plus hours?
I think, yeah, it helps to, I think, have those planned sleep breaks in there. I would have liked to not have gone down as early.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just the exhaustion from my weeks leading up to it. So hopefully in my next race, I will be a little bit more prepared in terms of that. I think that'll take care of that first night.
Yeah.
But also, you know, learning what types of caffeine, or if caffeine works for you at all. Courtney DeWalter, she can't even use caffeine because it makes her sick.
Mm.
Which is shocking that she can get through a race without that. It's amazing.
It's the candy, man.
Yeah. And she does micro naps of 1 minute, which I need to learn that.
It's amazing. Tactic. That skill, like, everybody should figure out how to do that. That. Seems, that's amazing.
That seems key.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Then there's, oh my God, I keep yawning. This is awful.
I mean, it is midnight.
It is late. And I've been, yes. And then strategically, yeah, just knowing what types of caffeine do and don't work for you, mm-hmm. when to use them, and when to sleep, I think is all important. Just in getting that turnaround times too, from aid stations dialed in.
Awesome. You're good?
Yeah, I'm good.
We talked a little bit about the long stretches with the 200 versus like a 100, you know, there's 20 miles between each aid station. Like, how do you prepare for that? How do you pack? What's in your pack for something like that?
So they're not all that long. There, I think were at least three that were 20 miles.
Yeah.
Some were still 17 and 18. Some were 15. The shortest, there was maybe one that was six, but that was very rare. Most of these were pretty long. So you did need to pack quite a bit. You needed food and calories and water. And depending on the time of day that you went for a section, it was going to be maybe really hot, or you need to make sure you have enough batteries for your headlamp if you're out there in the nighttime, or the right clothing choices too. So definitely is important to plan for something like this one.
Yeah.
But it was, that was a challenge, definitely for me. I would have liked to see aid a little more frequently, but I can understand how difficult that can be
logistically, yeah,
for the organizers of the event. Just the fact that, you know, there's just so many more volunteers required and, sure. and equipment, for a race of this length. I mean, you had probably a similar number of aid stations as some 100-milers out there, but they're just twice as far apart. So that was a new challenge for the race, for sure.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see maybe some extra water out there, even if it was just jugs of water halfway through some of those big stretches.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were definitely some roads in some of those parts that could have had some assistance, but there was some water that you could have pulled from, and they did recommend bringing purifying things, which of course I did not do, but actually I did pull from on course water sources a couple times, you know, just streams flowing. One of the 20 mile stretches had it had one stream near the end, but that was like a couple miles from the aid station, but really no flowing water except a kind of a stagnant lake. So you know, some people pulled from it. But I think they had like filters and things sure. like that. And I just, also, I don't know if I want to drink from a stagnant lake. Like, you can filter away the bacteria, but the taste is still something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, nah, not a huge fan of that.
Especially if, like, at the time your stomach is not maybe the best. And
right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What advice would you have for individuals who are looking to step up to that distance?
I need a Red Bull. I need something. Is that shocking?
No.
I think advice for stepping up. That's tricky because I know some people, they step up after maybe their first 100.
Sure.
I was talking to some people out there that have done that. That to me seems insane.
After their first 100.
Yeah, they do 100 miler and then they go and do a 200 miler.
Well, there's also no qualifying race. Like, there's no qualifiers at all for these races.
I'm sure some people haven't even done 100 and have attempted and maybe finished.
Roll right into it, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And it just depends how you approach it, too, because they do, compared to most 100 milers, they do give you a generous time limit.
Yeah.
It's 2 miles an hour. If you gave 2 miles an hour for a 100-mile race, would that be a 50-hour cutoff? There's not a lot of those. Most are 30 to 36.
40, I think, is the most that I've seen.
48 for Hard Rock, but that's kind of...
It was 40 for you.
That's a really tough race. The majority, I think, fall between 30 and 36 for most 100-mile events. And I know that you will slow down a lot more, but 100 hours is still very generous amount of time, I think, for most people to get it done.
Yeah.
Even if you've maybe only done 100 or even only done 100K, the fact is you can do, that's 50 miles a day, average, and then you have time to sleep. So even if you did your 50s in 18 hours each day, you could have 6 hours of sleep, and then you get up and you do it again.
Mm-hmm.
50 miles, 18 hours, that's doable, I think, for most people, especially to do four in a row. So I think you do see that. You see a decent finish rate for events like these 200s, because at least the ones that have generous time cutoffs, because it is more like a multi-day through hike experience.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Do you think, really should it be open, or should there be qualifiers for something like this? Cause it's not anything like, from what you said, 100-mile race where like maybe the cutoffs are a little bit more staunch.
Mm-hmm. It just depends. I think a qualifier might be a good idea.
Yeah.
Just because it is, in that way, it's a more advanced run because it's more self-sufficient. There's more time and things that can go wrong, and you're more tired as an individual out there, so you're not thinking as well, possibly. It's not to say someone couldn't get it done that hasn't done anything that might qualify you, but sure. I don't know that it would hurt to have at least say, hey, you have to have done 100 at least.
Or maybe if you're a through hiker and you've done like the PCT or AT or something like that.
Yeah, that would make sense. It could be a special circumstance. But yeah, I don't know. I would maybe put a qualifier on it, but who knows?
Yeah. Would you do another 200?
I was thinking no way at first. But, that's a very typical ultra thing to say.
Sure.
I'm never doing this again.
And then
you're signing up for a race next day.
Sure.
But I'm drawn to the Tour de Jaunt now, apparently. Actually, Josh, who works for us, he was like, Tour de Jaunt? I was like, crap. He like planted the seed, I guess. I had heard of the race, but I had never considered it because it just seemed too long. But now that I've done something that is of equal distance, because I think it's about 205 miles, except it has 80,000 feet of climbing, which is double this race. This one had under 40. So I think that one is on the list now for sure. And it's happening right now. And I know that like Luke Nelson, who's an American, just did it in 85 hours. That one does take people longer.
Do you think it's because of the climbing, like the elevation? Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I think the terrain is difficult.
Yeah.
So I think the winner takes, upwards of 75 to 80 hours, just the first place person, which is a lot. Yeah, a lot longer than Tahoe, which was 49 hours this year.
Yeah. It's until Courtney DeWalter gets there, right?
to
Tour de Jean.
To tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
she'll show.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you think like 200s will be more kind of catching in the next like year or two? Like it would be kind of because I mean it's kind of novice for like within our ultra running community. It's a little bit there's only a
you mean like niche
people.
It's
a little bit more niche. Yeah. Do you think it's kind of like a catching trend? Do you think like, you know, the competitiveness that we see in ultra running 100 milers now, do you think we'll eventually see that in 200 miles?
I think we just saw it. It just happened.
Yeah.
It was definitely a shifting point. There was also a lot of people at Tahoe this year who raised their hands at the briefing that this was their first 200.
Yeah.
And there's just so many people that are doing hundreds that I think it's only natural to want to try it at some point.
To keep going.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe you're not doing a 200 every year, but I think it's worthwhile, especially if maybe you've become really consistent at 100-mile finishes and it's kind of becoming a little routine maybe.
Sure.
I think it is good to step up. Me stepping up, like we talked about last week, and it really was, like, I felt that step up during the race, and it felt impossible, but it felt so rewarding by the end.
Sure.
And I'm so happy that I did it because it kind of did make me think a little bit after, well, like, what am I capable of? You know, what can I do? And I think that's why we all do this sport, and it is a cool way to see a lot of land. And, and it, you know, going through that second, that third night, it was cool. It was something different. And it's just, yeah, you're out there for so long. It is fun. I mean, I don't get to go out and just be out in the woods and sleep in the woods and run around through Jeep trails and up and over things for nights. Like out there by myself going through the woods at night, nighttime. Like I don't get to do that every day. And I think it's cool to do it now and again and to have, you know, a way for that to be set up for me with, you know, aid at every 20 is cool. I mean, I could go out and just hike around myself, but it's fun to be in like a race mode. And, you know, I was pushing that last 20 to try and catch the guy ahead of me. And it's fun doing that. And then the camaraderie was really interesting and cool at the end of this race, because that's kind of the other interesting thing is that it is its own community of people, because you're out there suffering, which number one brings people together, but number two, you're out there so long that the finish line is active for, you know, 2 days straight. Whereas, you know, Javelin 100, we have finishers from 13 to 30 hours, so it's 17 hours of people finishing.
Yeah,
but this one is, you know, a lot longer. So it was fun. I finished at 1 a.m. I stayed up till 3 or 4, just buzzing from the experience and talking with people. There weren't too many people around, but I slept for a few hours, and then I was just there, like right on site, like in a cot, like right there. You get up, and I just literally stayed there from 8 a.m. until close to midnight, hanging out. Courtney and her crew came back. We're just drinking beers all day. We're watching people finish. We're making tie-dye shirts at the Solomon booth. We're eating food. We're ordering food. You know, we're just, you know, I'm playing with my son who was out there with having a ball with everyone. We're throwing bags and it's a good time to unwind from the experience and just like hang out. And it was fun. That was a fun part of it. And I can see why people like that.
Awesome.
Definitely.
What was your overall, like, kind of takeaway from this experience? Like, what was the main thing that you learned kind of jumping up to this distance?
Yeah, I think just how much of a mental game it really is at these longer distances. I think for me personally, like I really drew upon my lifetime of physical experience. I think, and just pacing. I think pacing it, going easy early, was just such a key part of me having a good experience and an overall successful run.
Mm-hmm.
And I love being able to run late in the race and push it. And that was really cool. But yeah, overall, the takeaway is just, it's really far and really hard. And when you do something like that, that you didn't really think you could do, even in the moment, you know, just questioning why am I doing this? Why am I out here? I could have just done 100. I could just not have signed up or like whatever. But doing hard things, I think, is rewarding. And I'll look back on this as a definite highlight of my life for sure. And I'm proud of the accomplishment. Because, yeah, it's something that I wasn't – it's not that I was ever considering dropping or, you know, I'm against that for my personal self. You do you, everyone. But they were interviewing me at the start, and I was like, what are the chances you'll drop? I won't. Like, I will not quit, which is hard. It's hard to live up to that pressure. But I also think it's kind of great to have that where, you know – my ankle hurts, I have blisters, I'm nauseous, so deal with it and keep moving. And my crew was really good in supporting that. Like, there was no way I would have been able to drop.
They wouldn't let you.
From my crew. Yeah. No, absolutely not. They would have not given me a ride. They would have not shown me any sympathy. Like, there's no way. And that ultimately is great to have, because I think if I would have dropped, or if I would ever have, I would have regretted it massively. And I think I know some people that did drop from the race. They got sick, they're throwing up in the middle of the night, and they dropped because they couldn't figure it out. And then you could tell they were bumming.
Oh yeah.
You know, when they see that you have a buckle and you're sitting there glowing from your finish,
sure,
they're devastated. So
yeah, not a good feeling. Yeah,
not a good feeling. And I know sometimes it's unavoidable to drop. It does happen. You get some really crazy injuries or something, but I don't know, I try not to do it if I can help it.
Well, you had an incredible run, and I know that, you know, it's echoed in a lot of the community. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hopefully next time I do a big effort, I'll be a little bit more prepared, a little bit more rested, but probably not. Barkley, I for sure, that one really, I need to rest before that one a little bit more.
Yeah.
That one's, I'm not going to have even, you know, I don't have 3 hours to sleep and an extra couple hours to waste by going slower because I'm so sleepy and out of it.
Yeah.
That one, you got to be on point for a full 60.
I think we can probably help you with that.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Anything else to add?
Let's see. Would you ever consider it?
A 200?
Yeah.
No, man, I gotta get up to 100.
Yeah.
I don't know. Baby steps for this baby in a little bit. Like, I'm still too new to think about 200.
It is interesting because of the time cutoff. You have it, it might even be more attainable to finish 200 than 100 some people.
I really enjoy power hiking. I hike and through hike and camp, and that's really enjoyable for me, just to kind of be out for days in the wilderness. But I mean, I don't know, like, the distance seems beyond me at this point.
It's really far.
Yeah,
it's so far.
I mean, 100 miles seems like, yeah, oosh.
I would maybe try 200 in a 6 day, like one of ours. That would be kind of cool.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, like,
I mean,
across the years, or like steep camp doing. I think that's actually maybe the perfect way to step up to 200.
Mm-hmm.
Something like steep camp.
Yeah.
And the other thing nice about that is it's a pretty runnable, nice trail. And I think that's what we even got from our. We had a couple people, Darrow and and Tom, yeah. and I saw them out there.
They were there at 200. Tom, they ran it together, correct?
I think Tom got it done. Daro had to drop because of his back or something. Oh, no. So I saw him at the finish. He was bummed, but they had a good experience at Steep Camp this year.
Yeah,
doing the 200 there.
Yeah.
And it's nice because it is a runnable trail. Tahoe, there was a lot of non-runnable things and like annoying things part of the course and just bad footing. And you couldn't just run. Like you literally could only walk, even if you felt good, because it was just so technical, which is part of the challenge, no doubt. But I think, yeah, 200 miles, if you had 6 days, I think most people could get that done. You know, for, what is that? It's less than 40 a day, right?
Yeah, I think it's what, 37 a day?
Okay. Someone do the math out there. Comment below. But yeah, I think it's really doable. And yeah, a great way to get a 200 done, I think, is doing it in one of these fixed time events, 6 days.
It's pretty cool. You get a decent bit of climb, really, with like something like Steep Camp for sure.
Yeah.
You know, 50,000 feet of climb if you do 200.
For sure.
That's awesome.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Cool. What else?
That's all I got for you, Jan.
That's all we got on this one. Running 200 miles. Some say it's the new 100. I don't know if it's the new 100. It's 200.
It's
200
in
miles.
In its own league, right? Kind of.
Huh?
Is it in its own league as far as ultra running goes?
I mean, it's definitely a different level for sure.
Would you recommend like or maybe even create kind of a middle distance between the 100, 200?
Someone was recommending that, I think. Yeah, something to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
I guess people like round numbers, right? Like a 200K, that would be 120 some odd miles.
There you go.
Or like just a straight up 150. That's not as sexy as 100 or 200, though. I think that's the problem. Or there could be a random thing. Who knows?
I don't know. I think it's probably all in the marketing. You know, you could probably
250K. That sounds pretty cool.
250K.
Yeah, I think that could be cool. I think if there was something a compelling trail or route, that ended up being that distance.
Right.
You know, you have the bad water, like the 135.
Yeah.
But yeah, there isn't a whole lot in between currently. So it's really, that is a challenge. It's like you are. If you're wanting to do 200, your only option is to just jump and double up what you've done before.
Sure.
So you just go right from one to two. And that is the other thing that's funny is I heard several people talking about it. They're like, is this your first two? It's like we're just abbreviating it down.
A two.
It's like, is this your first two? Yeah, it's my first two.
Is there going to be a three?
Probably. Well, I mean, there's Volstate, which is a 300-mile road race.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe. It's just, I who knows where it ends.
I know.
The thing is, now you've got all these people that do all these 200s. They're doing 200s every month, and at some point,
they're going to want more.
That becomes routine, and I mean, for me, I think the longer distance thing that I would like to do that's on the back of my mind is the Arizona Trail.
Mm.
So that's 800.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be, I mean, it would be nonstop, but it would be, you know, you're going to sleep, you know, 4 to 6 hours a night.
Sure.
Not 30 minutes or 1 hour or something. You're going to get a little bit more, but... Yeah, I would like to go take a crack at that record at some point.
South.
And I think...
South and north? North to south?
Well, it depends when you go.
Yeah.
If you're going in the fall, you're going to go north to south. If you're going in the spring, you're going south to north. Problem with the spring is there could be snow up north if you... It's either going to be too hot down south or too snowy.
Too cold, yeah.
So that's problematic. In the fall, it's a little better weather-wise, but there's... some nasty tall grasses in the southern sections that grow up all summer. Like when
you lose the trail,
when Versteeg did it. No, you get these grass things in your feet, in your shoes. Mm-hmm. They get everywhere, little tiny things, like little seed things.
Gotcha.
And it just becomes a mess. So I think, I don't know if you could develop some sort of like gaiter system that went all the way up to your knees that just kept all that away. But he was having to take his – he duct taped his shoes because it was getting so bad. He was having to stop to, like, pick these little things out every mile. And it's just – it sounded absolutely awful.
Thanks.
Or I'll just go out there with a weed whacker, like, in advance.
Or that.
But, yeah. I think, yeah, someday that would be cool. And I think this 200-mile experience was good for that. But right now, Barkley is definitely the main thing. And and I think for me, if like I said, if I did another 200, I think it would be the Tour de Jaunt.
Awesome.
It just sounds so cool. And I don't even know much about it. It just sounds... It does sound like the next... Like, if I were to take another step forward, it would be that. It would be... That'd be my kind of race with all the climbing and everything.
There you go.
So, yeah, I don't know what else there is. I guess opening it up to anyone listening. Like, if you have questions for me, let me know in the comments. I'd be or reach out on Twitter.
For sure.
I know there was a lot of questions about my watch because I had the entire track, GPS track, that I uploaded to Strava. And it's funny because people were literally baffled on how it would last that long.
You charge it as you run, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like literally, like however you normally charge your watch, I just connect the USB into a battery pack.
There you go.
And at Tahoe, it was easy because you have to carry a battery pack anyways because you have your phone.
Sure.
And you have to have, you have the Root on there just in case. And I pulled that out so many times, tons of times. The other cool thing about this race that was interesting was we're all wearing GPS trackers.
Yeah.
And you could pull up a mobile view. It would like list where everyone, what mile each runner is at.
Yeah.
So you could pull up and I could see like where the guy just ahead of me is or who's catching me. So like you could in real time, almost real time.
Like no, within 10 minutes,
know like if you're catching someone, if someone's catching you. And I know that I heard Courtney and Kyle, the leaders, they were doing that too. So they're racing the end of the race close to each other within a mile, and they're both on their phones tracking and seeing where the other person is. That's cool.
That's really cool. That's a whole level up on competitive running.
It's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, if you guys have any questions on running 200 miles, totally. Let me know. I am now a certified expert. Something like that.
After one race,
I've done it once. So, but I think I have a pretty good grasp on it now in context of everything I've done. So sure. I still haven't run a 100 miler this year.
Oh yeah. Are you going to do that?
I don't know. I don't know that
you were looking it up right before.
I know. I'm
right
so,
before your 200.
And I mean, now it doesn't seem so bad, right? It's like, well, I just go out and run for a day and I'm done.
Yeah.
Sean Nakamura.
Yeah.
He won Tahoe 200 last year. And he then went the same week, next week, and ran Mogollon.
And then...
He was urging me to do that.
To go run Mogollon?
At mile 140, he like caught up to me in the aid station right when I was leaving. And he's like, you going to do it this year? You going to do the double? Because he's not, but... And I was like, no, dude. I don't know if I could do that. You're saying I should.
I mean...
I don't think I should do that.
It's right there.
It's right
it's
there.
It's actually this weekend. Just jump on in.
Just like in...
you do need to...
I'm now up all night again
yeah.
on a Wednesday night. I don't know that...
We're
I don't think I need to do that right now.
We're doing great things.
So, all right, guys. Thank you for tuning in this week to Trail Currents Podcast. Once again, if you guys want to check out either of our upcoming races, thank you for sponsoring the event. Us.
Yes.
We do have, I think we have an upcoming sponsor for one of our future shows. But again, if you'd like to sponsor the show, we are always looking for partners that would like to help support what we do here. And I know that we've had pretty good feedback from our sponsors in the past. Lots of people checking out your amazing products. So, and I actually used Splat Sunscreen.
Did you?
At the race.
Yeah.
Which is one of our previous sponsors. I actually... did not apply sunscreen the morning of the race. I forgot, but I had a pack with me. So when I was going up the first climb, I was applying it.
Nice.
And then I had it with me, but I forgot to reapply the whole second day. I think I was just out of it. But the third day I did use it again. So
I took mine on course marking over the last couple of days. I've been out like, yeah.
Yeah, and you're not totally burned up.
I'm not totally burned up for That's the awesome. First time. My face is not burnt. I'm so
That's
stoked.
Great. That's great. So, all right, guys. Yep, be sure to subscribe and check us out. And if you have any questions, please reach on out or topics for future shows. Thank you.
See you next time.
Bye.